episode of the Chat Pack Podcast, where each week the three of us gather around and talk about this, that, and the other thing. I am one of your hosts, Paul Holden. I am joined by my illustrious duo of co-hosts, Trevor Heim.
Hey, how's it going?
And the big bad man himself, Caleb Cole.
My head itches.
And there goes Trevor. He just left the Discord chat. We'll just assume he comes back in. There he is. Anyway, you can follow along with us at Chat Pack Live on Instagram and Twitter. You can also follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/chat_pack. That's where we usually stream this thing live. But no live stream this week, as the man who makes all the show happen is decided to travel in a pandemic of all times.
And I refuse to record anything but in anything but Logic, because I'm a Logic purist. And also, I kind of forgot that I was supposed to be live streaming it today.
Even though he committed to being the one to live stream us today.
No, that's not fair. I said that I could do it. I never said I will do it.
Semantics, I suppose. But anyway, thank you all so much for joining us. Guys, what's been up? Trevor, you drove across the country and to see the fam. You probably did it as safely as possible, I'm sure.
Yeah.
As COVID still's going on, man. Still a thing. Still happening.
Yeah, we certainly...
How's it feel to be back in Ohio?
Well, I'm definitely enjoying the abundance of oxygen that you guys have down at this altitude. I always feel like I need less sleep when I'm in town. Have more energy.
We also have way
you know, that's
sweat.
A thing that people don't really... I feel like people sleep on that a long time, no pun intended. The oxygen thing is real. So if you're ever going to high mountainous regions, be prepared for that. Pack extra water. Drink that extra water. Be prepared that you're going to be sucking some air.
Gross.
Just like that.
That was abhorrent.
We drove 1,600 miles, and we did it in one go. And I'm actually kind of...
I was wondering that.
Yeah.
You didn't like stop and like see a national park or something?
Dude, it was actually pretty crazy. Well, so my original plan was to drive out for a couple of weeks, and I was just going to come out by myself. And when I did that, I was going to kind of make a road trip out of it. Like, I was going to stop a few different places and, like, camp in my truck and stuff like that. But then, with a change of plans, Amanda decided to come out. And she needed, in her coming out, she needed to be here by this morning. And so, we kind of had to, like, rush to get out here. But because there was two of us, we were able to just take turns driving. So we left after work on Thursday, and I took the night shift, and I drove all through Thursday night. And then when the sun came up in the morning, Amanda took over, and she drove all through Friday. And we actually got here about dinner time last night, so we made really good time. But it was pretty crazy.
Are you more of a night driver or a day driver? Clearly, you took the night shift, but if you had the choice, what would you prefer?
I mean, I like driving at night because there's like no traffic or anything like that. You just set the cruise and, you know, cruise along. But there is that danger of like falling asleep. So for this trip, I actually, for a few days like leading up to when we left, I just stayed up as late as I could each night, and then still got up like really early in the morning. And so then what I did was like during the day, I slept leading up to the night I was going to be driving. And so then I was just awake all night, and it was pretty awesome. I had a cup of coffee with me, so made it.
Your
no
sleep
problem.
Schedule has to be absolutely fucked right now.
It honestly, I think it's mostly fucked because of the time change, because we got here late last night, and I was exhausted, and I pretty much fell asleep and woke up like at what would be my normal time. But for here, it was like 2 in the morning and then like 10 2 in the morning and then 10 in the morning, which is normally would be like midnight to 8 a.m. because I work around like 8, you know? So honestly, it's the time change that messed me up more than anything, but.
Yeah, COVID has firmly supplanted me as a 10 a.m. wake up guy. I don't wake up before 10 o'clock usually, because what's the point?
Well, my favorite time to wake, well, I like waking up as early as possible, but I feel like I always wake up between 8 and 9.
Yeah.
Like, it's always 8 something. That's when I get up.
I've gotten into a good habit of, since I've been working remotely during this whole, you know, past few months, I've gotten into a habit of, I normally start work at 8:30 and I wake up at like 8:25 now and just go walk right out to my computer and start at 8:30. So not having a commute is kind of awesome.
Oh my gosh.
Do you think working from home is going to be a new normal thing? Like, once we get out of pandemic time, do you think like people are going to shift to like, hey, you can work at home on Friday or something like that? You know, like, do you think that'll become like a more popular thing or a thing that's
done? If I could with this one, I saw something. It was probably on Reddit because that's where I spend a lot of my time online, and it was talking about, like, it showed some statistics about how much carbon emission could be averted by, it was some ridiculous statistic. It was like, if one third of the work population decided to not work, like, in person for one day, you know, it was like a very small percentage of people took one day and worked from home, then it was going to, like, destroy or like bring down carbon emissions a bunch. So, like, I know that there's certain companies that are looking at that and they're like, okay, like, all of our tech people, how about Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you come in, and Tuesday, Thursday, you work remote, you know?
Yeah, I think it should be something. I mean, why not? Like, I think people are clearly seeing that, like, they can get things done and, you know, have their workflow be not really that interrupted. Then, like you said, there's a lot of benefits that for people, especially, yeah,
carbon,
like,
carbon footprint definitely reduces.
Well, and it's just like, oh, I can, you know, like, I can get the kids off to school on those days I'm at home, or like, oh, like, I have to work on Friday, but I'm working at home. I don't have to worry about, like, still coming home on Friday. Like, once I'm done with the day, I'm already at home. I can go do what I want with my friends or family. Like, I feel like, why? I mean,
being able to cook your meals at home must be really nice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, my company, well, I think a lot of companies right now are realizing that they could have more, like, work from home opportunities or work from home, like, employees. But my company, for the last, like, 3 years that I've worked for them, the developers have always had work from home Wednesday. And it's kind of just this, like, special thing that the developers get. And for the rest of the people in the office, it's like, man, I wish we had work from home Wednesday. It seems really cool. And now, since everyone that works for the company has been working remotely for the last, like, you know, 4 months or so, the company is definitely looking at, like, expanding the work from home Wednesday thing, or expanding to, like, have everyone in the company work remotely, like, a few days a week, or, like, you know, different things like that, because they're discovering,
I'm sure, it saves them money.
Yeah, it saves money. Like, we're doing, well, for one thing, I know for sure that the break room, because we have, like, a break room that's stocked with, like, snacks and drinks and things like that. And I've heard that the break room costs as much as one employee's salary per year.
Wow.
So it's like $50,000.
How many people are at the office with you? Like, if you're at the office.
So my floor that I work on, I think, is about 160 people or 160.
That makes sense then.
Yeah.
So if you've gotten snacks and.
Well, not to mention, like, think about just, like, the regular cost of how many toilet flushes all of those employees are going to have, how many computers running, how many fans, like, above those
all
employees
the lights
are going to be running, and the lights, yeah, like, all
air
of
conditioning,
those,
yeah,
yeah, all of those costs are going to just kind of float away for those companies. And, like, for you at home, like, you probably won't really notice it much, you know, like, it's going to be like one of those, like, 0.5% tax on your employee, and then, like, the corporation makes a bunch more money. So,
but I've actually read some stuff that people, well, in the past, if you have, like, a home office, like, quote unquote, you can claim that on your taxes as, like, a business expense. And so there's been a lot of stuff about with this upcoming, like, your 2021 tax season, you'll be able to claim that, like, you were working from home for all of 2020 or whatever, and get, like, some pretty good tax credits on that. So you wouldn't even feel that.
Be really interesting.
That increase in cost as much, like you're saying.
And there's also a fund that you are supposed to apply for if you didn't get your stimulus, if you did something dumb like me. But hopefully I revised myself.
So what's happening? Like, I got my stimulus pretty quickly because I went to the
Where's I marked myself as being able to be claimed as a dependent. When that's not the true case.
I called it. I knew it.
No.
That was the first thing I said. I have, like,
no answer.
Oh.
I have, and here's the deal. TurboTax, when I did my stimulus check thing in the beginning, said I was going to be fine. I would got no information from the IRS thing the entire time. It just said payment status not available. So it wasn't until I got a hold of the IRS and they told me that. Dude. So I just today sent in my amended tax returns, and hopefully that is going to get me.
Yeah, I remember seeing that was like pretty explicit, like on
Yeah,
Reddit,
it's like one of the first things. It's the first. It's like one
said
of the first
like $1,200 for people who were like not a dependent, and then like $500 or maybe it was $600 for every dependent. I think it was $500.
And I get
so
that I made the mistake.
Get that money?
And
they
no.
should have. If you didn't get well, a check, then they they should have also
they didn't claim him. Yeah. Paul said that he could be claimed, and then no one claimed him.
See, but that's the thing. It's I'll just claim you. That taxes are, like, for me, and I don't know what it is like for you guys, but for me, taxes are hella intimidating. Like, I'm very intimidated by the tax process. Like, I don't want to fuck things up. And so, like, without
Paul,
fully understanding that...
it's a ruse.
Well, yeah, I guess from one person's perspective on it. But... I didn't know that there was like an age limit on dependents, like all that stuff. Like I just didn't have more than a very, 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 very basic knowledge of how taxes are supposed to work. And so when the question is phrased as, could someone claim you as a dependent? I was like, well, no, like. I didn't know that there was the age gap because I'm over the age limit, obviously, of being able to be claimed as a dependent at this point by my parents and stuff. But just the way the question is phrased of, could you? I was like, well, technically, yeah. You know, I was erring on the side of caution as if, like, it could happen.
Like,
you know,
I do have a mom and
like,
a dad.
That was my whole thing. It was just like, so... I obviously am an idiot, but it, you know, and I've had to, like, I paid TurboTax $30 to have someone double check my stuff to make sure I unchecked the dependent thing.
So
I had
to
pay another, like, $21. The IRS said if once my amended thing goes in, I should be able to get it, get my taxes
and
in.
And they're
there.
Like, yep, the processing time for this is 4.5
10
years.
To 16 weeks.
Wow.
10 to 16 weeks.
Holy shit.
How
do
to be
they
totally
even
honest,
keep track of it?
I don't care as long as I get the money. As long as I get the stimulus package. Like, I don't give a shit.
I always wonder that, like, how, like, a big... I mean, the IRS is, like, basically run like a big company, right? Like, I don't know much about it. So maybe... I'm sure somebody's like, no, it's not like a fucking company. It's like... Blah, blah. Like, but, you know, it's... I don't understand how 10 to 16 weeks later, like, do they have, like, an alarm set in the system? Or is there just, like, a long, like, a very huge backlog of people and they just go in a linear fashion from where people contacted? Like, how the hell?
It's got to be that. It's got to be that. The backlog? There's a backlog. I think that's got to be it because there's so many people.
So too.
But, like, for this amended thing, what sucks, and for when I filed my Illinois taxes the first time, I'm still sending it all in by mail. Like, what the fuck? Like, why can't, like, you're telling me I can file my taxes normally? In Illinois, I guess, according to TurboTax's thing, your first year you have to file by mail, which, what a dumb rule that is.
Yeah.
And it's like,
fuck the
trees. So that's like part of it. It's like, why can't I just, like, literally, for, especially in my instance, it was like all I needed to do for to amend my tax return was to uncheck a box. I didn't need to change anything else. No change in income, no extra W-2s, nothing. I just needed to uncheck the box that says I could be claimed as a dependent. But I had to mail all of this in. So today I had to buy 3 flat rate priority mail envelopes,
oh my gosh,
separate them out, like, and do all this shit to send it out today. And it's like, I don't even know if it's going to work. I mean, I already got my, you know, I got my federal tax return. I paid the $8 I owed Ohio. Illinois still owes me all this fucking money. And
but
it says
owed
I haven't done
Ohio?
This stuff.
Yeah, dude,
owe money.
I always owed Ohio because of their stupid school district tax that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think it was that slash mixed with probably the dependent thing. Like, I'm not sure what that would have been like in the beginning. So again, I fucked up. I'm an idiot. I know I'm dumb and I've learned from this. But again, it's just like, it just is a further example that taxes are just so convoluted and like, I mean, I don't know. I heard that other places do your taxes for you, like other countries.
That's
and
the thing,
like,
is
they,
like,
know how much fucking money I'm making. Like,
in first world,
they,
like,
have all that info.
In a lot of other first world countries, like, the citizens don't have to do anything when it comes to tax stuff because the government knows, they know all of their paycheck information, they know all of the stuff, like, and they just, it's all like done electronically and it's good to go. But then in the US, we have a privatized, like, industry that is based around taxes, which is like your TurboTax, your HR Block, like all those, they make money off of it. And so we can't have nice things here in the U.S. where your taxes are done for you.
The state of Illinois owes me nearly $300. If I owed the state of Illinois $300, they'd be on my ass.
They would send two big guys to come beat the shit out of you.
Like, but for that, they're like, oh, no, you didn't sign this properly. You didn't send this in the right way. It's like bullshit. You fucking liars.
And then they're going to be like, here's your $165 after we took out all the different fees and things for sending this to you.
The amended, my amended thing on TurboTax said, now my Illinois, I'm hoping the guy on TurboTax explained to me that I should be getting five additional dollars to what they said, but it went from $287 to $5. So I might only be getting $5 back from Illinois.
Doesn't make any sense.
It'll all be fine if I get my stimulus. That's all I care about. But anyway, that was my...
I wonder if they're going to send through a second round of that.
Nah, they're already cutting off the additional $600 that's on unemployment because they're sick and tired of people making more money on...
Yeah, but they might be shutting shit down again. And if they shut shit down again, they'll probably send out another stimulus package. That's my prediction.
Great.
You know, nothing makes a riveting podcast like complaining about tax issues.
That's true. Let me switch it up real quick and go into some nerd talk here. I beat The Last of Us Part 2 last night.
Oh, shit.
Fucking loved it. I thought it was incredible. Like, I thought the story was great. I don't know, man. I know we were talking. It's not perfect, but I think a lot of the stuff that people are having problems again, I mean, I don't know, man. I didn't see it. I thought the story was really, really well done. I thought the characters were really great. I think it drags a little bit. It's a little too long, maybe. They could have shaved off a little bit. But, you know, I think it was, I mean, all in all, man, I loved my time. I mean, it's really, really a great game. I mean, I don't know. I can dive deeper into it if you guys want. But I don't know. I didn't see a lot of the issues that people had with the storytelling and things like that. I mean, some people are just, there's something, do you guys care if I talk? Well, I don't know if I want to.
I kind of, no spoilers. I kinda play it.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not. Yeah, people just have beef with how a resolution comes at the end, and it's just like when you break it down and you think about everything, it's just like it makes sense and it goes there. And dude, again, I think a lot of gamers are just mad because you play as another character and another character is, you know.
Speaking of fan bases being upset, I know that we've talked about this a lot. But the other day, you know how YouTube will like recommend things to you based on your viewing habits or whatever, you know? The other day I went down like the rabbit hole of I watched one video that was like talking about a rumor that they're going to get rid of the Star Wars sequels in the canon, like in the canonical timeline, like they're going to erase those or whatever. And so I watched this video that was like a theory that was like, this is what might happen. And then because I watched that, YouTube hit me with just all these like Star Wars conspiracy like recommended videos. And I'm talking like crazy tin hat deep in the YouTube algorithm stuff. And I watched this video that was like just talking about how, like talking about the sequels and how, you know, they ruined the like the entire thing and like all this crazy stuff. And I was just like, people, like one, I think people have too much time on their hands, and two, like it shows that there's like a glaring, like, okay, basically my point is with The Last of Us, even if people are upset about it, I'm glad that they made the entire game and released it without like input from the fans, because I feel like if you take too much input from the fans, then you get the last Star Wars movie. Because the last Star Wars movie was like written by Reddit, basically. Like, you can just tell while you're watching it that it was like written by the fans.
They're just, it's such a giant echo chamber. And like, on top of that, it's just like everybody thinks that they know better than the writers and the developers. And like, if you actually look at what they do, like, it's fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Like,
The Last of Us as an artistic thing, like, if you're talking gameplay and graphics, is one of the best games I've ever played. If you're looking at how it looks, sorry, yeah, I'll let you go, but like, just how you're looking at, like, when you're playing it in those environments, it's beautiful.
Well, and like, just like the idea of like I've been trying to develop this D&D world because I want us to start a little D&D game, and I'm trying to make a Fallout world like Apocalypse.
That'd be tight.
I'm down.
It's coming.
Did you see the Fallout TV show teaser?
It's kind of weird that Fallout, the show that like has a lot of commentary about like capitalism and all that stuff, is being funded by Amazon, though. I think it's a little ironic.
That is definitely a little ironic.
But I'm gonna watch the goddamn shit out of it. You bet. You bet your ass.
But so what I was going to say though is that a lot of my inspiration for that D&D kind of thing comes from the podcast Dungeons and Daddies, which is a fan fucking tastic podcast.
I love that podcast.
Never have you watched or listened to that, Trevor?
I've listened to some of it. Yeah. Because well, I really like,
dude, it's so good.
Like in terms of D&D podcast or media, I guess like I got hooked on the Harmontown. They would do like Harmon Quest with like Dan Harmon and all of his friends, and they would do D&D, and I was like, this is really fun and I love listening to it, and I wonder if there's more of this. And then I discovered Dungeons and Daddies, and then what's the other one with those like twins? It's like the same guys that do My Brother and Me. They do like a D&D podcast as well. But anyways,
I don't know what that is. Yeah,
that stuff's like, it's really like, it's hard to find a good D&D podcast because I feel like I'm not like someone who's really really into D&D, but I like listening to people play it. Well, if it's like entertaining, you know.
So. And that's what I was gonna say too about that. Like, what I really like about that is they're kind of self aware about it, but they say that they're a loose D&D podcast, like a 5e, you know, 5th edition. Like, it's a specific type of the game. Like, it's a rule set, and I like that some people do it and they're like so strict about the rules, but like, you're just playing, like the rules are just made up anyway. So it's like, if you're just going to like just play some fantasy world game, like you might as well just like, you might as well have fun with it. Do whatever's the most fun, you know? And like, I think what I like the most about that podcast is the incredibly meaningful NPCs. And like, that is like, I think that's what, you know, we were talking about The Last of Us and like following what Reddit wants. And like, I don't think they understand like the depth of like just making a meaningful NPC, non-player character, is like something that like that takes an incredible amount of skill and thought. Like, to make something super deep and to like to make this character arc of like, oh, this character's a piece of shit, and then you're like, you know, they push him further and you're like, holy shit, he's such a terrible person, and then you see why, and you're like, oh, I like, your heartstrings get pulled for him, and you're like, ah, I understand how, like, you know, maybe like his father beat him or something like that, you know, like, so people like put all this, their personal thoughts into what they want the game to be without really ever realizing what actually goes into it. They just see the final product and they're like, I want this.
I mean, there's that super famous quote from Henry Ford that was like, if people, or he's like, if I had asked people what they wanted, they would have told me a faster horse. So like, you just have to make things that like people haven't
thought of
yet.
People usually don't know what they actually want.
Yeah, exactly.
And the way that you described the meaningful NPC, I mean, that is literally The Last of Us, especially The Last of Us 2 in a nutshell. It's because it's a dip, like a lot of people have beef with, you know, the fact that you spend a lot of time with characters that are new to the series. But I mean, once you again like learn more about these characters and you go through the whole journey, it completely changes your mindset of these, because you have to have I'd go into more detail, but Caleb, you said you want to play it and we're gonna live together, so I'd actually want you to play that game. It's and it like I said, it plays really well. But I mean, that just like nails it on the head, I feel like, for the discourse around The Last of Us, because people are just mad about a decision that they do early in the game and that is a big fucking deal. And then it goes on, and then, you know, they have some progressive themes in it, and so people are mad about that too. And it's just like, you're not just the bad, you know, there's just a lot more into that game that I think people, I don't know, just to sell it short, but it's just like, there is so much that goes into the characters and good NPCs, I mean, like good characters
are
around you.
Whiners.
Ugh, gamers are the worst.
Biggest whiners of all time.
But I mean, they just do such, like, those characters are so important and they build the, like, it just wouldn't work without all these characters. At least, I mean, this version of the story, like, you have to know all these characters. You have to go through the story that they lay out for you to get to the conclusion of where you're at. So much, I mean, there's just so much gray area. There's so much stuff to navigate between the characters in the story and the world. Like, there's just so much that goes into those, like, every NPC, that it's just bigger than just one character or something like that, in that game, at least.
Do you guys think that there's a problem with having games like The Last of Us 2 where it is essentially like an art piece, like it's just like a piece of art, but the way that they've marketed it and developed it was to be almost like a AAA game? Because I feel like,
well, it is a AAA game.
Well, I feel like AAA games, though, like, if you're trying to make a game that's going to cater to the widest audience and make the most money, then the game you're going to make is going to be something like Fortnite. Like, it's not going to be this art piece that's like has like an emotional impact. Like, that's not going to, there's no way that you can make that appeal to everyone. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's interesting, though, is The Last of Us is like, it appeals to so many people. I mean, it's like one of the fastest selling PS4 games, like, yeah, in terms of sales numbers and things. It's like crushing, like, it's doing incredibly well. But I mean, the story, it's that same thing of where it isn't like trying to just make you feel cheery, or like, you know, it isn't like an open world RPG where you're just going to different, like, oh, build up your character super good, go to this big open world and do this. It's like the game makes you, or forces you into a lot of uncomfortable situations, and makes you like deal with the fact that maybe you personally don't want this to happen, but the game is making you do those things. And I think that, you know, it's telling its story. And I don't know. Like, I don't know, well, if that answers your question.
I guess, like, I'm
so
not
you're saying,
saying
it's not an RPG.
I'm not saying that.
I mean, there's RPG elements, but no, it's definitely not like a, it's not a, it's not a Grand Theft Auto. It's not,
yeah, not a choose your adventure.
It's not a Skyrim. It's not a, I mean, there's open world elements. There's RPG elements, but at the end of the day, like, this is the story. It's not so much of like, oh, build your character and kind of tell your story. It's like, no. Here's the story, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I guess my point was more just like when you make something like that, like, you can't necessarily, like, you could make something like that and it could appeal to a huge audience and be ultra, like, best-selling, super popular, but you can't have made it from the beginning with the intention of hitting those milestones. Like, it needs to be made first and foremost as like an art form. And then if it happens to appeal to a huge audience and make a ton of money, like, that's cool too. But I feel like we're hitting this point now, right, where, like, you know, like, production companies making like movies and making video games and stuff are like, they're shooting for that huge hit. And in doing so, they're like shooting themselves in the foot on like the art side of it. Like, it's what happened with like season 8 of Game of Thrones. It's what happened with the rise of whatever that last Star Wars movie is called.
well, and all of those last Star Wars movies.
And I'm not saying that like The Last of Us 2, like, I think The Last of Us 2 still stands as a great game, just like the first one did. But I think people are starting to like expect, when it's like coming from that big of like a budget and that big of a developer and like all that stuff, they're like, we want, you know, huge action and CGI dragons and boobs. And it's like, that's not what the first game was. Like, if you play the first game, you would know that that's not what the second game's going to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's just, that's, you're totally right. I mean, it is just like, they set out to tell their story. It did not matter
as
like
should.
What the people, you know, they had it. And I think you're right. At the end of the day, like, unless if you're like a pop star or someone that's in a situation where it's like, let me just churn something out because I know I'm popular and I can make a quick buck, because that happens. I mean, let's be honest, man. Famous people don't do, Bill Murray's not doing Garfield for the love of Garfield. You know what I mean? Like, he's doing it because he's like, let me turn a quick buck or something like that. But it's like, most of the time, and I think if being true to like, tell your story, tell your piece, and I think that goes for any art form, music especially. Like, if you're an artist, you shouldn't, unless you solely want to compromise to make some money and, you know, get paid for it because you can, that's one thing. And I don't fault people for doing that legitimately. But, you know, at the end of the day, you as an artist should be creating your art. Like, it's your art, your story to tell, your commentary. It's like, it's what you want to do, not let's just shoehorn everything in what people want. Because too much fan service sucks. And we talk about it all the time, but I think the new Star Wars is a prime example of that. Like, there weren't, and if you don't take risks, then you can't get greatness either.
Yeah.
Like, The Last of Us 2 is
going to melt away. They're not going to stick around.
And it's, but The Last of Us Part 2's risks, I think, work.
Yeah.
It, you know, at the time, I'm flustered. I'm like, why is this? What is that? You know, like, why did you choose to do that? You know, but then when I put the controller down and I got to the title screen again, I was like, whoa. Like, it just, like, that's what it, I liked. I loved it. You know, it was just like, I didn't love everything. I wasn't happy with everything. There was stuff that I personally wish was maybe a little different. But at the end of the day, I was like, I'm glad that this is the journey and the story that they told. And this is the journey that we went on. Yep. Not just because, hey, let's bring on Joel back and let's just do the same old song and dance. You know, like, it's a different. Like, they're in the same world, but they're two very different games, which I really, really appreciate, because there's a lot more substance to The Last of Us 2 when you're thinking about where it is in that universe versus what happens with The Last of Us 1, which kind of what I was thinking of, like, which one do I like more? It's kind of hard to think of that, because it's just, I, like, while they're the same game, you know, in the same series, there's just so much difference in, and I just love the complete package of the whole series. I just, you know, now knowing the full story and everything, it just makes me like the first one more, like, honestly, like, in a way.
Well, and I just feel like in anything like this, it's like, no one's, like, you could, yeah, you could play it safe and you could give people more of the thing they like and, you know, makes a lot of money and please a lot of people, but at the end of the day, like, no one ever gets remembered for playing it safe, you know, like, none of your ultra classic, like, top movies are in that category because they played it safe at the time and, you know, didn't break any new ground in the story they were telling or the thing that they were doing, you know. So I think it's,
do you guys have any great, like, specific examples of things that you thought were, like, big risks that really paid off? Like, obviously I've been talking about The Last of Us. Another thing that I can think of is the Nolan Batman trilogy.
Yeah.
Grounding it in reality, you know, really taking away Nolan didn't want the larger than life villains. He didn't want a giant crocodile man. He didn't want, you know, like, all this stuff. He wanted it to feel real. And I think The Dark Knight, especially, I watched The Dark Knight Rises again recently, and I will say it definitely does not hold up as well for what I like. But The Dark Knight, I think, is just like a prime example of just, you know, a risk of, like, you think of, like, especially superhero movies before that and just now what superhero movies are. Like, that was a risk that I think really paid off, to really ground a superhero story in reality. And, you know, it was and stuff. So I don't know. Do you guys have any, like, things that you thought were, like, risks that really paid off or stuff that you really enjoyed?
I mean, I feel like that's a great, great example, especially because we have, like, almost like a litmus test that we can compare it against with the new DC movies that have been coming out. Because, like, at the time, you know, Nolan, given his, like, portfolio of work that he'd been working on, like, I think I've seen, like, behind the scenes stuff where, you know, Nolan says he would tell people he's working on a Batman project and they'd be like, what, you're working on a Batman movie? That's like, because they're like, you know, the Tim Burton movies are pretty well liked, but, like, those wacky. Are pretty wacky and stuff. And so they're like, Christopher Nolan, like, Mr., you know, dreams and crazy, you know, storytelling science type stuff, like, and you're making a Batman movie, like, what the heck's wrong with you? This will be the end of your career or whatever. And then it's like one of the best, like, superhero movies / series that has come out, like, in recent years. And then now we've got the new DC universe that they've been working on that like, I would say for the most part, like, the what made it to the theatrical releases was pretty safe, because they were trying to compete with Marvel, but they were playing catch up on Marvel, because Marvel beat them to the, you know, big cinematic universe interconnected movie thing and all of that, and beat them to the team up movie and everything. And so they were like, let's do all the DC stuff that people like, and we'll keep it really safe, but like do all the stuff people like. And those movies have just been terrible. And it's like, you can just look at the Dark Knight series and be like, yeah, they took Batman, but they did something really different with it. And people thought it was so stupid when he was working on it. And now it's like, it's like a example of like great storytelling.
I feel like the top superhero great, like, movies, it's like Infinity War, Endgame, Dark Knight. I feel like arguably would be the two, like one and two, at least for a lot of my thing. Maybe you throw Winter Soldier up there, maybe two, but like, I mean, yeah, that's a great example of just like DC nowadays was trying to appease. They're like, oh, everyone loves the Marvel movies. Let's try and do this instead of really having a plan that they were passionate about and sticking to that plan. Justice League's a prime example. You let Zack Snyder basically make a whole movie and then you get rid of him and you bring in Joss Whedon, who completely changes the movie.
Yeah. Like, well, and I feel like he changed it at the whim of like Warner Brothers and stuff too.
Exactly.
And like what fans were wanting. And yeah.
And going back to Star Wars is another great point. Like, in reality, it would have been more interesting if JJ was confirmed to be, this was JJ's trilogy the whole time. You know, he could have built his whole, you know, the whole story. And I just think that's prime examples of what we've been talking about with, you know, bowing to some pressure.
Well, each one was built.
Not saying the JJ stuff could have been great. It just at least would have been his cohesive vision.
Yeah.
The whole time.
I mean, you can just tell, like in The Force Awakens, he was creating very, like a bunch of different seeds of like things that he was going to explain later or things that were going to come into play later. But because he only was making that first movie, like it was up to the later people to decide what they wanted to use or not use. Like he was just like throwing a lot of stuff in, you know? What'd you say, Kim? Yeah.
I said that's just a horrible idea. Like just doing one movie at a time when you know that you're making a trilogy and there's supposed to be like a cohesive story arc of the three.
What? Yeah. Ugh. I don't even really understand. Like, I get having like multiple people work on a project, like multiple directors. Like I was just watching that behind the scenes with the Mandalorian stuff, and like every episode of the Mandalorian had like a different director connected to it and things like that, because it is helpful in the creative process to have more people come in that have different perspectives and things like that. Like that's what went wrong, I think, with the prequel trilogy, is they were like, George Lucas, you did an amazing job, do it again. And he was like, no, but there was all these other people that helped me the first time around. And then he was on his own, kind of a thing. But
I think TV and movies are a little different, though. I'd say every medium is a little bit different for sure, though. Because I think in TV, bringing in some different directors is like a cool way. How you get some cool episodes that tell stories differently.
Well, I think that they could have done the sequel trilogy with different directors like they originally planned and stuff, but just have the whole trilogy be written out by one person or something, or planned out by one like group first.
This is where we want to start. This is where we want to end.
Like, here's
what
we want to do.
Let's all create this is how we're, but now you guys are going to tell us how we get there.
Yeah.
But it's like, this is what the overarching plan should be, instead of just like, you know, clearly two different visions in that. But to go to your earlier point, Trevor, not a chance in a million years they retcon those new Star Wars. Never. No way. There's so many. There's theme parks. There's so much merch. All that stuff. No way it happens. But Caleb, you got any? What do you think? You've been awfully quiet over there.
You're talking about that same question that you posed to us.
Yeah. Do you, have anything that's like that you thought was like risky, like a sequel or something that you thought, or like a thing that built
not
a world?
Not a sequel, but I think that like most of the stuff that Quentin Tarantino seems to do, like I was thinking like the innovative stuff, like something like Pulp Fiction. Like I remember watching it and just being like, when I was done watching it, I was like, what? Like, was there a story there?
Right.
Did I miss? Like when it ended, I was like, wait, surely like somebody hit the stop button and I didn't see the last 25 minutes of the movie. But like that stuff is like, I mean, that's why that movie still gets watched all the time today. And it's like, what, 20? I mean, that's a 90s movie, right?
Which movie is that?
Isn't it 80s? Pulp Fiction?
Yeah, I mean, it's like 30 years old or somewhere around that.
I feel like
1994.
I feel like a lot of 80s movies, well, maybe it's just because of like what has been deemed.
Not an 80s movie.
Oh, Pulp Fiction. Hey, that's the year I was born.
Yeah. All of us. Me too.
95.
Young boy, our young buck.
No, I don't know if this is just because of like nostalgia or like the classic movies or something, but I feel like a lot of 80s movies have really bizarre like plots or really insane ideas behind them and are now like super classic movies that everyone loves. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's a great point there with Tarantino. I think that's a really good, because he tells his stories. Like, I mean, just think about his most recent, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a prime example of, you just sit and watch that movie and you're like, okay. Like, in reality, you're just like, this is literally like, there's no big crazy, you know, there's obviously the crazy thing that happens at the end that has historical significance, but the most of the movie at the end of the day is literally just like an actor who's falling out. Like, he just isn't as, he's getting typecasted. He's not as popular. Like, I mean, that's really it though. Like, and that just so happens to live next to this person whose career is taking off. You know, and like, that's where it goes from there. Because yeah, there was the whole point. Like, when Once Upon a Time in Hollywood wrapped up, I was just like, all right. I was like, I was glad to just exist in that world for a little bit, but like, you know, it wasn't anything like in terms of like a crazy, like, whoa, Inception, like my mind has changed, you know, like crazy, like something like that.
Christopher Nolan? Just like,
yeah, it's just, that's a, you know, but Nolan's a good pick too, I think, outside of Batman too. I mean, just look at the subject matter he's tackling. I mean, his Tenet, I don't know what the hell, it's time travel or time stopping or something like that.
I've actually heard rumors that Tenet might be a sequel to Inception.
That'd be cool. That'd be really cool.
But
actually,
that was like, what was that one movie? It was I can't remember what it was called, but like, there was this dude. He was the guy who, he plays Professor X in like the, some of the X-Men movies when they're all younger, and he's the main character in Wanted.
James McAvoy, or
yeah,
the guy from
he's the main character. The in guy Wanted. From that's what people know, but he from Wanted
plays a Split's
that's
personality what, guy too. Yeah, yeah. Split, right?
That's no, that's Split, what I'm talking guy? About. Yeah. That movie is like that was bonkers. Like, you're talking about the Tenet and the Inception. Like, that was wild, that like when it got towards the end, you realize that it was like a sequel to that Bruce Willis movie. It was just like,
yeah,
what?
Unbreakable. The like Unbreakable. The last scene is
they didn't even tell us until the very end.
But that just like, it was not like, a sequel. I hadn't seen Unbreakable. No, it's a sequel because Bruce Willis is. Yeah, it's a sequel because Bruce Willis is in at the end, and he's Unbreakable. That's his. I got to see that movie, but. You know, that's a great point. I mean, it's just it just shows like the best stuff is like a risky thing. It's just like, again, and like, just when you're not bowing just to sell the most toys, or, you know, and it's like, I don't know, or have the biggest box office numbers, especially in today's world, like Fast and the Furious, you know, they're doing crazy stuff, but it's nothing too crazy because in reality, international markets love watching The Rock blow shit up. Like, at the end of the day, like, that's really what they want to see, is The Rock blowing shit up. Like, you know, well, it just, and I that's think, when you get to see like some dope art.
I think that risky mentality too is why there's kind of that trope of like the genius artist being super aloof and just like such an asshole. Is, I think, because a lot of the time, to some extent, to like work so hard on something and to put so much of your soul into it, and then for the public to see it, and like, if you're taking a risk, like, those risks, I like, not a lot of the time do they work out. Like, that's why you don't have like an infinite amount of cult classics. Like, so in order to do that, you really have to just like not give a shit what people are going to think about it. Like, you have to, like, know that your project is going to work. And, like, half the time it won't. But, like, you have to have that mentality. Like, I know this is fucking dope. And we are going to put all of the resources we can into it. And, you know, sometimes it works. And then sometimes you get a movie like The Room. Like, where it's like, I guess somehow in a weird world that we live in, it did work, I guess.
It worked out better than ever.
That guy got played by James Franco. Work.
Yeah, The Room, I think, is a special case where it was just so, so bad that it has stuck around.
I think the interesting
thing with The Room, though, is not just the thing that comes with it, but again, sometimes it might not be the art, but the story behind the art. That's more like The Room is much more fascinating when you learn about Tommy Wiseau as a person. This mysterious guy who's got so much money, who doesn't, you know, there's in the world of everyone having information on people, no one knows anything about this, like where this guy comes from or anything like
how
that.
How old he
like,
is.
I think that makes it.
Why
how
he has
old
so
he
much
is
money.
Exactly. Like, I think that makes
like,
it more
didn't he tell everybody he was like 25? And it's like in the movie, you're like, yeah. Yo, that guy's like nearly 50 years old.
Right. And there's just so much more to that. But yeah, and then, you know, but like it just goes, but you have to have confidence in your vision, you know, and you can't shut off getting criticism or input from the outside because, you know, the collaboration can help take things to the next level. But at the end of the day, I believe you really got to have confidence in your vision, in your idea. And it's like, if you're really passionate about stuff, fight for it. But also, you can't close yourself off completely to, like, you know, the people that you're working with, the people that are helping you with the process and the things like that. Like, it's something that I think, you know, is definitely it just shows, like, how hard it is to be a successful artist. Like, because at the end of the day, like, like you said, Trevor, you mentioned it earlier, it's great if it hits that public atmosphere. It's great if it hits the public and it's a smash. But at the end of the day, like, you just got to have confidence in, you know, your work and what you do. Just like we have confidence in these Chatback podcasts.
And I feel like for every one that hits way big, there's like 100 that don't. And
Sure.
It's just like the nature of creating things.
How many movies are on Netflix, you know, right now versus how many movies are actually watched on Netflix right now?
We watched a movie on Netflix the other night that was called, like A Magical Night with Love Loughlin or something, or... But anyways, it's starring Aubrey Plaza, and then it's got Craig Robinson in it, and it's got Jermaine Clement, and like this whole cast of people.
I love Jermaine Clement.
And it was the worst movie I think I've seen recently. Like, it was so impressively bad, and I don't know why. Like, it was like a kind of a fun premise. I don't know, but we just found it on Netflix and we were like, wow, this has a lot of good people in it. We're going to watch it. And then we, like an hour and a half later, we were like, wow, why did we watch that? That was terrible.
That's how I felt about Uncut Gems, that new Adam Sandler movie.
I haven't seen
that. Like, we watched that whole thing and I thought it was so fucking bad. Like, it was so long.
I disagree with you immensely. You're crazy.
What? You liked that movie? It was so
Uncut
bad.
Gems is a phenomenal movie. No, you're wrong.
What?
It's a great movie.
Okay, hold on. I'm not trying to argue, but I just really want you to tell me why. Like, I don't think I was confused about it. Like, I get the point, like, it's a dirty fucking world, you know? But, like, I just felt
like
when I finished watching it.
The high-stakes game of someone playing literally, like, this guy who lives in New York playing the dangerous game all the time, has fucking deep ties with the, you know, not only does he owe money to the mob, but the mob has connections to his own family. I mean, the dinner scene when they're doing the religious part and literally he's the guy that he owes money to and the connections to the mob is sitting at the same table as them and they're breaking bread. Adam Sandler's performance. I mean, that movie is literally just 2.5 hours of stress and it's so good. It's just this is a grease ball. How does this grease ball get out of this? And I won't spoil how it happens, but dude, in the ending, boom, punches you just right in the face and that's it. Like, I loved it. I thought it was awesome. I didn't know you didn't like that movie.
It didn't work for me. I think you defined it. It was like too, like, I felt like there wasn't
There's nobody you like in that movie. Like, there's no character you, other than Kevin Garnett, maybe.
No, even Kevin Garnett, like, his character, I was like, what the, why the fuck do you want this thing, you fucking idiot? Like,
but it's funny if you kind of know a little bit about Kevin Garnett as, like, the basketball player, too, that it kind of makes sense in a way, too, because it's just, like, that's, like, the mentality Kevin Garnett, like, had as a basketball player, but... No, yeah, I,
it was just like, I felt like it was just a lot of, it was kind of like the Pulp Fiction idea where it was like this, it was like this slice of somebody's life. And like, yeah, it's like, it's a dirt. That's why I said it's like a dirty world. You know, it's like this world of like a guy who is kind of sort of a con artist. Like he really is. But then at the same time, he's not like, is he the diamond or like the gem game is like, to me, a giant con, but like, you know, it, people don't see it that way. But then, like, I don't know. It was just, like, I think I would have really liked that movie if it was an hour and a half. Like, the fact that it was 2.5 hours, I was just like, holy shit, is this dragging. Like, I think that's probably
yeah,
why
it was just,
I
liked it because I was hooked on to, like, yeah, no, and I mean, again.
The dialogue and the content in the micro scale was great. And like Adam Sandler mm-hmm. played a really good role. Like he did a.
I mean, he
like,
played a perfect his, sleazy gem dealer.
He did like, a very, very good fucking job of playing that character. But like that, I just don't understand why people like require the movie to be like 2 hours and 42 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever that was, it was totally. So long, and there was just so much content and like so much building, and like it never really built to anything. If you know, like, I'm trying not to spoil anything because it is a relative.
I don't know about. I don't know if it
lost
build
my
anything.
Interest.
It literally builds all to the end. I mean, the end. It builds all to the moment at the end. I feel like you're just the whole time you're on the ride of how is he going to get out of this? Will he get out of this? And I was along for the ride to see, you know, where that, you know, what would the answer to that question was going to be, but.
Yeah, I feel like it just rode all on that. Like, it was too much movie to ride on just how is he going to get out of this? Will he get out of this? It just kept going.
Right,
I get you. It kept rising. It was, like, so much tension build and not enough release for me.
Have you guys seen Tales from the Loop on Amazon Prime?
Nope.
I've been watching through the first season. So, it's based on... Well, the whole show is based on this artist... that I really like, and his name is Simon Stollenhag, or Simon Stollenhag, but he's a, oh man, what country is he from? I want to say he's like a Swiss artist, but anyways, he creates this art that's like, he does it digitally, like on a computer, but it's like kind of a retro 80s looking world that has this like really futuristic sci-fi technology within it. And it just like the pictures that he creates, just kind of like you look at them and you're kind of like, whoa, that's kind of weird, like kind of cool. I wonder what like the story is behind here. And so they made a show that like explains what the story is behind like the worlds that he depicts in his like picture. So when they announced it on Amazon Prime, I was really excited. It's called Tales from the Loop because I love his art, but the show is a little bit of a disappointment because, basically what they did was like create like these little mini stories that are kind of loosely connected. But at one point, like in every episode, there's always at least like one point where like if you paused it and screenshotted it, that is like one of his artworks. So they like they recreate the artwork like in real life in the show at some point. And then like the rest of the episode is like explaining. It's like either leading up to that or getting away from it or whatever. And it's just so painfully slow and like kind of boring because they're just like, they don't really explain like the things I want to learn about. And they're trying to like teach a lesson in each episode. But then the real like purpose of the episode is just to depict like that art. And so I'm like, I want more. Like, I, what, why, like, who made this? But anyways, just I thought of it because I've been watching it, and then Caleb was saying that, you know, Uncut Gems was pretty or like too long, and I feel like that's kind of how this is. Like they did a full season of like 10 episodes, and I'm like, they could have done this in like one episode or something. Like it's slow.
there's a lot of fat in a lot of things, I think, that, yep, that I feel like can be trimmed off. But we're going to wrap things up here for the Chat Pack podcast. Dove into some interesting topics there today. Wasn't the topic we had planned on talking about at the beginning of the show, but that's fun. We had, I think it was nice that we dove into something. Good artistic critique there from a bunch of people that probably don't have a lot of credentials when it comes to artistic critique.
Well, you know what? That's okay.
Anyway, thank you all so much for tuning into the Chat Pack podcast here. But before we go, I'd like to have my wonderful co-host wrap up. Trevor, what are your closing thoughts? And then we'll get to Caleb's recommendation.
Closing thoughts.
Oh, Trevor, are you excited for The Boys season 2? Did you watch The Boys?
That is a good closing thought.
Did you see the trailer?
I saw the trailer for season 2. It looks awesome. I also saw the trailer for season 2 of Umbrella Academy, I think it's called.
I didn't watch that one, but I think I might.
I've heard good things about it, and I haven't watched it either, but I saw the trailer for season 2 and I was like, might have to check it out. Could be cool. So, Boys season 2, well, Umbrella Academy. That's my closing thoughts.
And now I was going to kick Caleb. It to Caleb for Caleb's recommendation here, but
he loses that privilege.
He have left his post. Did he send me a text about it? No, he didn't. There he is. There he is. He's back. Sorry. Caleb, we're buying some time. It's time for... hold on. Caleb's recommendation. Caleb's recommendation.
Am I ready? Okay. So unfortunately, I can't show the label, but this week, the recommendation is for all you hot, hot, tasty garlic hot sauce lovers. If you like buffalo wings, or if you just like having a good morning egg with a little bit of a kick in the ass, you know? It's Heritage Fare garlic wing sauce, buffalo style. It is so tasty. It's so garlicky, and it's got the perfect amount of heat. And I'm kind of somebody who always says, like, yeah, that could be hotter. Like, I'm always about that. But this gives that tingle on the tongue that you're looking for, and it doesn't come with a tingle on the bum, if you know what I'm talking about. Like, perfect amount
except
of spice.
Except for the nice kick in the ass that it gives you in the morning.
This is true. What it looks like for those of you who are seeing the video, which is two. Exactly. Woo. Two.
There it is go. Two so people because we weren't sitting.
I use honestly had a much. I Heritage remember in the
Farms
middle of this
garlic.
Week, no. Wait, Heritage Fare,
Heritage
not Farms.
Fare. Heritage Fare garlic buffalo sauce.
Fare is F-A-R-E. Far.
And that's available at your local grocery store.
And if you use Kroger. Coupon code Caleb,
it is so good. Yeah. Coupon code Lubberboy B-O-I.
Heritage
no,
Fare.
No, but I actually had. I remember, like, in the middle of this week, I was like, oh, that's my recommendation this week. Like, I had a great recommendation, and then I couldn't remember what that actually... I need to start writing them down. But, like, honestly, this is a great recommendation because every single time I make a sandwich, I, like, put this on it, and, like, Kelsey keeps on telling me. She's like, you don't have to keep telling me that you like this sauce so much. Because every time I put it on, I'm just like, man, I love this hot man, sauce. And she's like, yeah, like, I got that.
You're like, you know what this could fair. Use? And garlic she's like, that sauce that you like so much.
I'm like, how did you know? What? You read my mind. We're so connected.
I just bought it. No, you didn't. You've had it for months.
Caleb's recommendation. Caleb's recommendation. This has been the Chat Pack Podcast. Thank you all so much for joining us again. We'll be back live streaming as soon as we can. We'll make Caleb actually set things up so he can stream it next time. 50th episode coming up, and I believe we're actually all going to be together doing some cool stuff too when we get to that point.
Hey, disclaimer with Caleb's recommendation, very high in sodium. Just saying, if you put salt on your eggs in the morning,
watch out for your ankles. They're gonna
swell. Or hold off the salt. You know, don't use the salt if you're gonna use this.
Got it. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Chat Pack Live, and of course, keep it tuned to all your favorite streaming services where you can catch every episode of the Chat Pack Podcast. Until next week, we will catch you on the flippity flip.